Unfiltered Love Radio. Unfiltered Love Radio. Oh, hey, you know where you at. You know where you at. Yo, 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 what's good, Unfiltered Love people? It's your guy, Calissus, because I listen from heaven to earth to meet to you and settle it all in love. I am the Freedom Coach, and y'all know what y'all are listening to. Unfiltered Love Radio. Woo! Yeah, y'all know. Look, I'm mad excited today. I'm mad juiced. We got a special guest. Man, it's going to be great. It's going to be awesome. But before we start that, y'all know I like to start off with just a little bit, give you a little knowledge. If you've never listened to the station, welcome, welcome, welcome. Make sure you like, share, subscribe. You listen on the Anchor app, make sure you start it up. Make sure you subscribe to the channel on all digital platforms. Spotify, Apple, Y'all know I can't talk. Spotify, Apple, Google, Deezer, I don't know, iHeart. Wherever there's a podcast, guess where we are? Unfiltered Love Radio's right there. Say, hey, Google, play Unfiltered Love Radio podcast. And they'll be like, okay, searching for y'all know. But look, the purpose of this station is to make sure you are lit. Yes, lit. Lift it, inspire, and transform. That's my job, so you can be free and live your mega life. How do we do that? I have tools, techniques, and strategies that I like to give. Now, some of the things are paid for, some of them are free, like this podcast you're listening to. It's free. Well, kind of. You know, I get like 7 cents. Never mind. I don't even know about all that calculation. But make sure you actually go through the process of being lit, because you should be lifted. You should be inspired, and you should transform. Because our goal on this station, I said every time and I will continue to say it, is to reach 7.6 billion people. I think Corona took those other 0.2 that I wanted, because, you know, we were getting up there to 7.8. But, you know, the government, like, you ain't going to even go there, because you already know Corona was done in the lab and they put 5G. They took the oxygen from the people because, you know, they absorb that, because it's only 1,000 feet worth of, you know, we're not going to talk about gamma rays. I digress. So, Unfiltered Love people, just make sure you subscribe, but make sure you're actually paying attention to what's going on. Make sure you're aware of your surroundings and what you're doing. Anybody that's affected with the coronavirus or any other viruses out there, make sure you hydrate. Keep yourself safe. Follow normal precautions. Look, Lysol, some prayer, some meditation, some mantras will take care of your life, and plenty, plenty, plenty of water. I know a lot of people don't like drinking water, but as we are coming into new technology and going into new biodestructive diseases and viruses to have population control, we're still going to reach all the people we can. However many billion people remains on the earth. And as long as we're here, we're going to reach them. And I don't just reach them by myself. I reach them because of you. Because you like, share, subscribe. Because you take whatever you learn here and you're able to dispense it out into other people, right? Because that's how we grow. That's how we learn. That's how we move. The moment that we stop learning is the moment we die. Yep. The moment we stop learning is the moment we die. So for you and your house, you have to believe what you say. And on here, on Unfiltered Love Radio, I absolutely believe everything I say. Now, does that mean that I don't change? No, it means that I do change and I evolve. And sometimes my thought was a seed. But as we talked about previously, you cannot eat a seed. If you eat your seed, then it can never grow a plant and your plant can never bear fruit. Y'all got that? I know y'all got that. If you don't got that, hit me up in my DMs. I know some of y'all going to be tweeting me because y'all can hear the show halfway live. So with that said, welcome to Unfiltered Love Radio. Get ready for the episode. We'll be back. Unfiltered Love Radio. All right. Unfiltered Love people, man. Let me tell y'all, today we are going to meet one of the most activated people I know. It's funny because sometimes people come into the studio and I've been waiting for them for a while. This is another one that's probably a year and a half in the making, because that's just the way it works. I feel like I have to stop people for a year and a half, and then finally they say, okay, Kel, I'll do it. And it's pretty annoying to me, right? Because I feel like I shouldn't have to stop you, especially if you're my friend and I see you all the time. There's two more out there that we're friends and whatever. But this is my confidant. This is the person I can go through with any political issue. And like, really, we find resolve to it. We try to really figure out what's good for the community, what's good for the people. And this person has no problem standing up for whatever they believe in. Will argue you down, even if they wrong. Then come back and apologize later and be like, oh, I can see how I could have been a little matured in that area. But without further ado, Unfiltered Love people, welcome my sister. Who is you?
What's up, everybody? It's your girl, Kayla.
Talk about Kayla. Her name's Sujet.
Sujet. Also known as Sujet. One of the spoken word artists here in the 757. Just to call Kale out on his bullshit.
This is my show, so you don't get to answer this. So go ahead and call yourself out first before you. First you do yourself, then you call people out.
Okay, cool.
So go ahead, call yourself out first.
I love Kale. But to call him out on his bullshit when he said, you know, one of his friends that he see daily, he see Rob J. daily.
And I do not. Why Rob always get pulled to these interviews? Hey, bro, you get so many shots. Rob is one of them. He's one of the ones that ain't been.
So he needs to call Rob out.
Well, Rob, I did. I said two more.
Rob all the time. And I have to fuck him.
Let me tell you, time out. In the last few podcasts that I've done, I'm so happy to have female energy in here too, because it's so different. It's such a different vibe. Like, and I've been dying for females to come, and I've had three, so this is wonderful. And I'm probably gonna have a lot more because I just got it. Never mind. But just to back up to the bullshit you were saying, this is Unfiltered Love Radio. So if you're listening and you don't like the words being used in the language, remember it's unfiltered. So it's not for everybody. So viewer discretion is advised. Now that that's it, back to her bullshit. Rob actually did a show, one with me when they dropped the 22 album. But that was so long ago. That was 2 years ago? 2018. So that's when I first started the podcast. It's literally the shortest interview up there. You know why? Because this nigga rushed my interview. And he ain't had a real interview since. And everybody knows some of my favorite people and my favorite person who had the most interviews. It's Truly Fresh. Yeah, that boy has had the most interviews with me. Anytime he goes through a new phase in life and doing something greatly productive, man, he blessed us with it first, and I'm able to put it out. And I love that. But anyway, we're here to talk about you. Who is you? What you do? You a poet? Well, I mean, what's popping though?
I'm a poet. I'm an activist.
Yeah, you're an activist. We know that. She will act the ass in a city meeting and act as if it was just okay, normal, and walk out like, why they even talking to me like that? First of all,
why are they talking to me afterwards?
Your tone.
It's not my tone.
It is your tone.
It's not my tone.
And you know what? So this is a funny thing. Being a black woman, do you feel like you have to say things a certain way to be considered nice? Look, you over here coughing. If you got corona, make sure you use that.
I do not have corona.
Look, I don't care what you got, but I don't like any of that congestion and all that. My listeners know I got my voice back recently, so I can
Rick Clarida. I went to the
doctor
yesterday.
Anyway, you being a black woman, do you feel like your code switching is even more so because you're black and like you come off aggressive?
Yes, I always feel like...
She over here dying. I don't know why she's so damn weak, but...
Because a lot of people don't understand how hard it is to be a black woman. Like, how everything you do, you say, your hair, how your posture is ghetto, it's aggressive. I can stare at you without saying nothing. Somebody be like, why are you looking at me like that? Why are you being so aggressive? So cold
switching. So do you have resting bitch face?
I don't think I have a resting bitch face. I think my face, I'm always smiling. So
facts.
So I'm smiling, trying my hardest not to cuss you out. So trying to catch myself to say what I want to say. But yeah, as a black woman, we always have to code switch to please. You know who we really have, like, to please? White men or other black females. Like, they don't have the same issues
so
like we do.
That's really interesting you say that, right? So I'm working the other day, and I'm working, and I realize I'm talking to another black female who's complaining about the job, and I'm usually pretty optimistic, like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then she said, you know, I just don't like working for certain people. And I say, I don't either. And so by this time, about four or five of us are sitting around, and they go, Kel, who you don't like working for? And I say, honestly, the worst people that I've worked for, and I hate to say it, is the queen of the earth. I hate working for black women. I really do. I feel like black women, I don't know if they feel like they have to be a certain way when they get to a certain level in their careers, but anytime I've had a supervisor, a manager, or anybody, even a co-partner on some things, that's been a black woman, there's always some kind of confrontation or conflict. And I wonder, like, is it me or is it them? But what I come to find out is that it's exactly what you said. They have to kind of fit into some mold that's not really them. And yeah. Somebody on top of them is telling them something. So, like, they're coming with you with all that energy. And you just feel like, yo, I feel bad for my sis because, hey, good sis. I'm trying to work with you and work, you know, help you look good. But at the same time, the attitude. So
is it really an attitude?
Or I don't know. You tell me, because I'm not a black woman, so I can't. You know, and that's what I'm saying. I don't know. I feel like we all deal with pressure different.
Yeah.
And I feel like black women, because they know that they're literally the bottom of the workforce, that they have to. Like, and this is like not. This is not unbeknownst to me. I'm pretty awake when it comes to these things. Like, I'm conscious enough to know what black women are going through. So I just feel like, man, you got kids at home, or you're single, but you're in this position of power. And now you have to work for the person that you don't really want to work for. And you have to do things to write people up, or, you know, send these negative emails, because they put you in that middleman position.
Yeah. I mean, to be quite honest, like, a lot of times it's not attitude, it's frustration. And sometimes I have to say, queens, you know I love y'all and I ride for y'all to the fullest. But sometimes it is attitude, because it's so hard. You fight a daily fight just to get bumped up to like assistant manager. Just using that as
example. What I'm saying. It's like never the top. So I feel y'all frustration,
so
right?
It's like, okay, cool. You're at assistant manager and you're working. And it's not like you can just like have hard work and dedication, because obviously if you're a black woman, and I'm being super sarcastic when I say this, obviously as a black woman, you had to sleep with somebody to get to the top.
Oh, yeah.
And if you didn't sleep with somebody to get to the top, you had to pay them, or you have something over their heads. And it's just like, it's a never-ending fight for black women, not just in the workforce, but with healthcare, with just most...
We won't even get on that healthcare thing.
Oh, please, yeah, we won't get on that healthcare thing.
But yeah.
And with multiple things, and it just gets frustrating, because when you do get in power, it's like, yo, my peers saw me work hard to get to where I'm at, and then now you're mad at me.
You're listening to Unfiltered Love Radio. We'll be back. Yo, 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 what's good, Unfiltered Love people? Shagai Kalissis. You're now listening to Unfiltered Love Radio. So we back. Unfiltered Love people. We're talking to Sujet Kayla Walker. Miss Walker, if you... Never mind. I ain't gonna even say that. Because you better not be nasty with it, because I'll shoot you. So... We're talking about, you know, women in the workplace and women in... you work in academia. And so how is being able to work for the next... The work to empower the next generation and to put your kind of twist on it? Is that always accepted? Because I know some of your challenges and struggles, but, you know...
Man, it's not always accepted. And that's something that I have to learn, is that... I have to realize that some people forgot where they came from.
Ooh. Now, you know, because I feel like some of my listeners are not black. And that's pretty cool. So when you say, forgot, who are these some people? Because we're not ambiguous on here. This is Unfiltered Love Radio. And so what I really like is, first, to really be unfiltered and have candid conversations.
Right.
So.
I feel like some of these people are educated black people. Uh-huh. I feel like educated black people, and I feel like older. Let me say that. Older educated black people have become more dangerous in the movement than white people. Mm. And I say that because they took the standards of European culture and they mush and they put it into and they go into these urban societies and they think that they're doing great things, and in reality they're doing harm. It's like, straighten yourself up, cut your dreads off, do this, do that.
So what are some of these things I hear you saying? The dread, cut your locks, and be able to,
it's,
you know,
basically oppressing
up.
Your blackness is what they're telling these kids, like kids, teenagers, whatever you want to call them, mm-hmm. to oppress your blackness so you can get a job. And I feel like if we are only teaching kids to get a job, what are we preparing them for life?
To always be a servant, to be a slave.
Exactly.
And it continues on with the misconception of that we'll never own an NFL team.
Right.
Or we'll never own the NFL.
Right.
It's always that you can be a coach. You can be the quarterback.
Right. Why can't you be the owner? And you know how mad I get when...
Or why can't you be the founder, creator, CEO?
Right.
And that's, you know, that's really big with me. And debating, you know, I'm at this like roadblock in my life, and you kind of know, where I'm debating, should I quit my profession, even though I love it, to go into my own thing, or do I stay there because I'm a bigger impact where I am? Mm-hmm. And that's a hard, you know, choice to make when all of your life, you're known now as millennials. I say this all the time, and I'll continue to say it. We ain't working for somebody for 20 years.
Oh, no.
That's just not what we are built to do. We're not. I think we have come, especially black people, I feel like we've come to a place where we understand, you know what, we're too creative for some of the positions we're in. Right,
we are.
So you're able to go out. You're able to help the next generation go. You say you're a poet, mm-hmm. and you go, where do you do poetry? What do you teach? Do you teach it?
I teach poetry at some local middle schools. And also, if somebody needs me to perform, then they will hit me up. Like, I have a performance next week at the Dynamic Diva Tea Party. Check me out. March
13th. Somebody asked you to plug? Shameless plug cat ass. Keep going.
March 13th at 5 o'clock at the Silver Lounge.
So when it's time, you know, usually I have a section where people plug themselves. I ain't giving her that damn time.
Boop, 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 boop.
Nope.
So yeah, so I go around and do poetry. And also, I kind of incorporate my poetry in my classroom as well. So like, we would start each day off of me doing a poem, and I ask the kids, like, hey, what did you take from that to help them with comprehension?
So if I just walked in your class, it's 7:50, 8 o'clock in the morning, what would you say to me? What would this poem be? Give us a poem that you would give the kids in the morning.
Okay, well, class don't start at 7.
Well, I don't know. What time it start? 8?
9.
Oh, 9. Okay. Oh, you teach a middle. So, that, yeah, because that's elementary, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm thinking, you know, when I worked in high schools and middle schools. But give us a poem. Tell us something that you'll tell the kids in the morning. Yep, you're on the spot.
All right, cool. I'm going to go to this one. Dear black boy, hold your head up. Square your shoulders back and greet this world with a warm smile and a memory. For every chest that didn't rise with the sun this morning. For the fathers who came back for their sons to find out that they too have said, black boy, God created you first. In fact, I am a part of your ribs. I protect your hearts. Yes, but you, black boy, you are my spine. So be my backbone, black boy, and show me that there are reasons to stand up straight. Show me that you are more than a stiff body for target practice. You breathe, black boy, or have you forgotten? Inhale the light that you left on the curbside. Pick it up and make something out of it, I beg of you. They measure your worth in cap full, so you infer that popping caps make you a man, but do not let demographics permeate your skull. It's all a facade. Shatter statistics with your ambition, black boy. You were born like Adam, made in perfection, even before you bit the fruit and resist temptation. Dope boys make money, yes, but doctors make miracles, and life isn't just about survival. You have to strive for substance, something to chew on. Inspire me. I seem to misplace my son. Don't set on me. So I would spit that, and then I would.
Woo! Wait a minute! How you just go, oh my God! Selah. That means at peace, have a moment. You said it was some line. You wrote that?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I write all my pieces.
That was amazing.
Yeah, it's longer, but I do chunks of my poems because I did slam poetry, and slam poetry has to be 3 minutes. So I just chunk it up.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, because, you know, kids' attention span ain't longer than a minute.
Right.
So you got to keep it short. So I'll keep it in chunks, and I'm doing it in chunks, and I'm like, all right, this is the first stanza, because right now we're learning about poetry. So, like, this is the first stanza, and then we would talk about it and stuff like that.
So you start every class like that?
Yeah, I start every class with a poem.
So, I guess being elementary, it's easy that way, right?
Yeah.
If you're in middle school or high school, that would be a little different, because you're doing it 6 times a day. Which would still be kind of dope, because it's 6 different groups of kids that hear that message.
Right.
So that message was very empowering. So when you, damn Daffy Duck over here, Powerween. When you're doing that, are the kids attentive?
Yeah, they're very attentive, especially like my boys in my classroom. Or they'd be like, I believe so. I believe I can do that. And like, who's
yeah, when you say be my backbone.
Yeah,
that I don't know. For me, I felt like, yeah, all right, I got you, bro.
Be my backbone, black boy, and show me that there are reasons to stand up straight. Like
that to me, that was, I mean, the way it started was already dynamic, right? The first line. And then you go on to say, be my backbone. Then later on, you say, before you even, it's like you play with the Adam and Eve thing. You say, before you bit the fruit.
Yeah. Before you bit the fruit, you were still worthy. And I feel like that's a good reminder to remind the kids. And that line is honestly what the kids ask about all the time.
Is that line?
What do you mean by that?
Yeah.
And I'm basically telling them, like, it does not matter how many times you fail in life.
Mm.
It does not matter how many wrongs you do. It's not about how you start. It's about how you finish. And even though Adam was still a holy man, even before and after he bit the fruit, God was disappointed in him that he fell into temptation.
Come on, preach!
But God was disappointed.
Hey, before Adam bit the fruit, she said what?
Hallelujah!
Hallelujah! Look, she got, this is a sermon though. But seriously, this is a sermon.
But yes, God was disappointed in Adam that he bit the fruit. But God wasn't disappointed that Adam bit the fruit. I'm sorry. He was disappointed that Adam fell in temptation.
So this is my thing. And I'm not trying to be churchy in this moment or anything. Was it that God was disappointed that Adam did that? Or was it that God felt like the relationship, God knew he had to do something different with the relationship? Because you know how like sometimes we'll go into situations and we'll say, man, I plan to, you're a teacher.
Right.
So you go in your classroom, you have a whole structure ready, you're ready, you do your little poem in the morning. The next thing you know, two kids are fighting.
Right.
And then you're just like, damn, I had a vision and a plan for you, and I really wanted to reward you with pizza at the end of the day. But because y'all fought, I can't give you the pizza, you got to work for it now.
Right. But
so don't you feel like that's God's relationship with us sometimes?
Sort of. I believe that, I think God knows all things. So he knew.
His omniscience?
He did.
Woo!
He did. So God knew Adam was going to fall into temptation.
Right.
But God also knew that he had to redirect Adam so he could still get to the promise.
So this is probably why we have the story of Job.
Right.
We're saying you won't deny me like Adam did or like Peter's going to do.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, because when we start looking at things in like context and content, and then we start looking at them from a revelationary point of view,
right.
Like all of those things are necessary. So then you kind of see, oh, this person did it. This person didn't. This person kind of had it. This person had that piece. And then all the puzzles go together. Right. But that's how we are as a collective. Right. You're listening to Unfiltered Love Radio. We'll be back. Yo, what's good, Unfiltered Love people? Shagai can listen because I listen from heaven to earth to me to you and sell it all in love. You're listening to Unfiltered Love Radio. Yo, we back. So over the break, we were just talking. We were just kind of divulging in the conversation we were having. We here with Sujet. It's your boy, Kalissis, because you know, you listen to Unfiltered Love Radio. So talk to me about vision.
You know, I wear glasses, so I don't have the best vision. I don't have the best vision now. And I got bifocals, so.
Oh, Lord. She double can't see. She need to see far in this.
Chilling.
Take me close to you.
I need a stick when I take my glasses off. I'll be like, where's my stick? I'm joking.
This Rufus over here, Mole Rat. That's Kim Possible reference for you people that don't know.
Right, I'm about to say that. About vision, you know what I'm trying to say? Honestly, when I think about a vision, I don't want to be spiritual and I don't want to be extra deep.
Yeah, but you don't have, no. And you know what? That's what I think people will try to be, and you don't have to be like, what is it to you? Like you?
Yeah.
You have it. You know.
Right. When I think about a vision, I just think about it, like, honestly, like God's gift. Like the gift that God gave you to see it, and then he's going to give you the willpower to execute it. You know what I'm trying to say? Like, honestly, I have one main vision and one main goal in life, and that is to bring souls to Christ by any means necessary.
So that's interesting you say that when you say bring souls to Christ. So I'm assuming you're a Christian. I'm pretty much. Are you a Christian?
I'm sensitive.
I don't know.
I'm offended. I'm like, yes, I am.
But you know, that would be my answer. My answer when people assume I'm a Christian, I get really pissy, you know.
Right.
I'm like, don't call me a Christian.
I have a relationship
with God. I'm saved. It's a great divide.
Because
I like to be the called out. I like to be the iglesia. I like to be the church, but I don't want to be a Christian. Don't Christianize my Jesus is what I typically say. So I'm assuming you're affiliated as Christian, right?
Yeah.
And so when you say lead people to Christ, what does that mean to you? Because I feel like, never mind. I'll tell you what I feel after you tell me what it
is. So I feel like you feel the same way. I'm like, I don't know how you feel. I'm just gonna say that. That's the women inside of me or some shit.
Oh, so women, y'all heard it first here. And all y'all black women out there, don't say, you just assume that I'm not. Act up, you can get smacked up head asses. Look, she just said it.
But no, seriously, listen, it's a part of life. We're humans. We all assume. So bringing people to Christ, this is what it looks to me. It's basically reminding people that God is still real in the midst of trouble.
Not just a concept?
Not just a concept.
I think that's what I feel like the church in America, because I can't say the church in the world, because I've been to a few other countries, and I've seen the church operate, and it operates at different levels. As it's not one level is better than the other, and one is wrong, or some are more, whatever. It just operates differently. It's just a whole different, and it depends on the culture, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like when, you know, you say, oh, bringing people to Christ, and, you know, having discernment and doing all these things, and you're saying that God is relational.
Right.
And not a concept.
He is relational.
But that's one of the things that I don't know is taught in the church in America a lot. And I don't know if you can answer why. You're an ordained minister, so, you know. Now I got to tell people. Now I'm telling all your business that, you know. But why? I don't. You should see her face, y'all. She like, nigga, go to break. You got me over here. But, you know, I mean, I am as well.
Right.
So, you know.
You know your real name,
Domingo. Hey, no, don't be saying that. I will cut that part out. But yeah, when you're coming into this thing, it's knowing more. And like, so I always act stupid. I act like the dumbest person when it comes to churchy stuff, because right. I never want to get sunk into, well, God is this.
Right.
Because that may not be who God is for you.
Right.
So being relational, you're talking about being relational with God. How do you take bringing people to Christ to your everyday life?
I love them. Like, literally, I love people so much. I think that's like a low.
I wish y'all could see her damn face right now.
I truly love people. I got this big smile on my face. I feel like what a lot of people forget is that God is love. And I feel like you can't bring people.
He won't let you down. That's the Commodore shout out.
Right. And this is a prime example. Like, your thing is called unfiltered love. And God was unfiltered with his love with us.
So that's the thing. It's so funny you even mentioned the name. And I don't even know if people know the origin. And one day I'm probably going to do a whole segment on why it's called unfiltered love. But in short, in theory, I was thinking in my head, raw grace, right?
Mm-hmm.
And raw grace to me equals love. And my friend, we're talking, and I literally, like my best friend, he understands who I am.
Right.
Because we've been friends since we was got kids. And so one day I was just cussing him out, and I was really mad because he made a poor decision. And literally the next day I made a poor decision, he cussed me out. And like we going on, he was like, oh, you're just so unfiltered. And I said, but I love you. And it just kind of stuck from that moment. And I wrote on a coffee filter, I wrote unfiltered love. So if I go back and I'm going to find this picture and post it, because I always say I'm going to do it.
That's so beautiful.
But it's a coffee filter that said unfiltered love. And then that's just kind of how the idea started in my head.
That's dope.
So because, I think people, and I've said this before, but people think love is rainbows and candies and babies. Woo! And cute. But what about those fucking ugly babies? Because there are some ugly babies. I'm sorry. Some of y'all got some ugly babies.
No, there is no such thing.
First of all
as ugly babies.
Whatever.
Beauty is in the behold.
Nah. Mm-mm.
Wait.
That's why your vision messed up.
Right.
Some people got bad vision because they baby's ugly. And look.
Ooh, I'm talking about people's kids.
I ain't talking about people's kids, but you know you got an ugly kid. First of all babies look like rats when they come out. I don't care what nobody say.
Oh my god.
That first like 6 months, they all look like little baby rats.
Chilly.
And somebody's probably, oh my god, yeah, go on and tweet me, whatever.
Chilly.
I don't care.
Chilly. But the babies look like rats.
But because every baby ain't cute. But this is the point I want to get at. Every baby ain't cute, right? And like people did agree to disagree on that, like, oh, are their kids? No, they're gonna grow into their looks. I know some kids that never grow into their heads. They adults and still got Bobby World looking heads.
Bro, prime example, myself.
I'm just saying, like, people got big heads. So, if we look at love that same way, love ain't always these sweet, lovey things that say, oh, I just want you forever. Oh, I'm speechless when I see you. No, love is sometimes like, you fucking get on my nerves. Get the fuck away from me. Blah, blah, blah. And it's not a pushing away, but it's a grooming process.
It is.
Like, even if you take it biblical,
come on,
God says that he will prune out and chastise those he loves.
Almost right.
Right? You was about to run.
I'm
chasing that. No matter what. So churchy over here.
I need you more and more.
Whatever. So goofy. But that's even that's what love is. Cause love is, you think you take it to the cross. The cross is gory, it's bloody, it's nasty, it's disgusting. Like they sit there and they stick a piercing inside, water comes out, which is probably bile and bodily fluid, so it stinks because it's been trapped in you for 33 years. Like, let's be real about it. The woman with the issue of blood, she's outcasted and thrown out to the outer parts of the city. So you know she smell like who knows what because she's been dealing with this for 12 years.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we can't act like these stories. We can't put our physical... We can't take the physicality out of the story.
Right. Even when you think about it, like, natural form, when you're in a relationship and you love somebody, like, everything is not...
Or your parents, or grandparents, or us. Like, they get on your damn nerves.
I know my parents got on my damn nerves.
Or one of the things that I'm working on, I keep saying this probably every episode, but I'm really creating a term for people who live in, like, a past experience. And, you know, the word would be rumination, but those people who keep replaying it. So, like, you get an argument, they're like, oh, but remember when you did blah, blah, they never, like,
ooh,
actually forgive it.
Like that.
Right, they never forgive it and let it go. So, I'm really thinking of a word of that. Nobody else better not write this damn book. Because I keep saying it on these podcasts, but I'm already writing a book, so whatever. We'll just have two of them out there. So, but, like, I haven't coined the term yet. But once I do, I will. But it's just, though, it's like that thing, you know?
Right.
So, like, I was just wondering, like, you know, what do we do with that?
I just wish people would know, like, the same how people need grace, we're going to need that same grace for other people.
Mm.
Because I feel like a lot of people forget, you can be the most coolest, nicest person in the world, but we all make a mistake. If we do it intentionally or unintentionally. Like, I remember a prime example. You know, I consider myself a good person.
Mm-hmm.
I consider myself a good person.
Right.
And I remember I did something really fucked up. Really, really fucked up. Like, really bad. And I did it because I was so mad and I didn't think about any consequences mm-hmm. afterwards. And I had to pay for those consequences. You know what I'm trying to say? And the same person who did me wrong, and I'm like, oh, da 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 da, stuff like that, they had to spare grace on me.
Mm.
Or I was, you know, I was going to have to pay this big fine, I had to go to court,
right. All
this other stuff. And they looked at me and they literally said, because you spared grace on me, I'm going to spare grace on you. And it's okay. And when that moment happened, I just thought about, like, God's love and God's grace and God, like, how it's like, okay, cool. I think it's dangerous to think that we could never do wrong to anybody else.
And so
that's a dangerous thought.
So, and that's the crazy thing, right? Because we all do wrong. We all do things, whether it's intentional or unintentional, like you said. And the rain falls on the just and the unjust alike. Right? It's no in between. It just happens. Right. Life just happens. However, the just, we know we have a God, so we don't grieve like the rest. I mean, that part is, I think, always gets left out. So we don't grieve like the rest. So we still go through life and life still happens. But when you say that they had to spare grace on you and you had to spare grace on them, what was one of those times, you don't have to tell us the situation, but like something really tragic happened to you and you just literally had to forgive the person and not actually forgive them, but forgive the action. Because sometimes we're forgiving the person, but we don't forgive the action. So it lingers.
Right. So, okay, it's not felt to love. You know, okay to talk about this. So back in 2014, I'm sorry. 2014 is my senior year in high school. And I was raped by one of my friends, right?
What?
I was raped by one of my friends. And he goes on, you know, in current time, and he plays for the Baltimore Ravens, right?
Okay.
So back in 2014, all this going on and stuff like that, trying to go to court, all this other stuff.
So is he older than you, or
no,
you guys were the same?
We were the same age.
Wow.
So his father is, his father was a police officer at that time. His father retired now. And his mom was a doctor.
Okay.
And it was very well known in the community. Nobody took my case.
Because of their status?
Because of their status. And all my parents were, my father was a convicted felon for not driving around without no license, which is, that's a whole nother
thing. I was about to say, we won't even talk about those things.
And my mother, even though my mother used to be a chief of police in the military or whatever, she's just a medical record person. So it was like, they held no weight compared to his family. So 2015 goes. It's time to start college and stuff like that. Year passed. Still nobody took my case. My parents are still fighting for justice for me, right? And then there was one point in my life where I said, I need to forgive him. And I went to, was going to counseling.
But see, okay, so wait. And that's that part that I kind of want to hone in on. For something that tragic to happen, and I'm sorry, Queen, that happened to you, but I'm also not, because it made you who you are, right? And it helped you become this being, because we have to go through some things, I think, purposely. And I feel like anything that happens to us automatically passed through the hands of God.
Right.
But we can change the scenarios and change the events of it.
Right.
So when that part of forgiveness and coming to yourself or coming to that thought, how was that?
It was hard.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, really hard. You would have thought that, like, I know this might be a dramatic scenario to compare it to, but it was kind of like getting off of drugs. And I never did drugs before, but it was
like a withdrawal stage.
It was like this withdrawal stage. Like, it was hard. It was like a battle, because it was kind of like you went through the emotions like, okay, cool, I'm going to forgive him. I'm going to forgive, you know, myself for holding on to this anger. But then you realize how angry you are, how much you suppressed, and went from, why did nobody take my case? Why did anybody believe me? Oh, yeah, and I forgot to say that. Like, when I spoke out against him, they told me, why would somebody of his status want to sleep with somebody like you?
Wow.
And that's what my guidance
counselor said to me. And I'm sure that hurt.
That did hurt. Because it's like,
what's wrong with me? Right.
Like,
anybody would want to sleep with me. You're on Unfiltered Love Radio. We'll be back. This is wow. Yo, Unfiltered Love people. You know where you are. You listen to the right place. You are here to be lit on Unfiltered Love Radio. Yo, Unfiltered Love people, stay tuned. You're listening to Unfiltered Love Radio. It's your guy, Kalissis, you know, the Freedom Coach. So we're back. We talked to Sue Jen, and when we're just talking about things that she's went through and getting as to that state of forgiveness, and then people not believing what you say once you go through something and being able to get over it, pretty much. So you were saying nobody would take your case, then they'll say, like, why would he want to sleep with somebody like you? And then that feeling of just like, what?
Right. My feelings was hurt. Like, my feelings was mostly hurt because it was like, like I said, back to my guidance counselor. My guidance counselor did not believe me. And this was the same guidance counselor who got me my full ride to the school I went to in Pennsylvania, Columbia University. And this was the same guidance counselor who I shared a birthday with, who came over for my 16th birthday, who watched me grow, who got me into poetry, who got me into Teens with Purpose. And for him to look me in my face and was like, I don't believe you. It was like he spit on me, like, indirectly. And it was just a lot. And like I said, it was kind of like a withdrawal, because I was angry, then I was sad, and then I had to question things, because at that time, like, you know, I was a virgin at that time. So, like, and I was really gun-ho at that period of my life. Like, I'm going to save myself till I get married, all this other stuff. And then once that situation happened, I felt very I didn't feel, like, wanted or desirable and stuff like that. And it really affected how I view myself in relationships, even, like, to honestly, for being transparent, even like till like 2 years ago. Like, mm-hmm. that's a long tail time.
It was.
But even like 2 years ago, it was kind of like, I can't be in healthy relationships because I was raped. You know what
I mean? So let me ask you this. So after you said it, do you feel like the stigma came after or was it there immediately?
What stigma?
Of I've been raped.
The stigma came after because in that process, you kind of still trying to process everything. And then I didn't
So this is my thing. Did you know, and I, you know, because I find this to be one of the most interesting things, when even looking at media, looking in the news and all of this stuff and the Me Too movement, and I think you know how I feel about that, it's full of shit. But anyway, that's a whole nother thing.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it's a whole nother thing because I feel like the white letters by Barack Obama set up the Me Too movement and pushed it forward into this place where sometimes I feel like it's being taken advantage of. And so it is my fear that as we go into the next decade, and even this decade as we've already started, that people are not taking it serious. And that people, eventually we're going to be such in a, everybody's a Me Too, mm-hmm. that it's not important anymore. And that is my real concern of it, because
yeah.
we're going to normalize it so much that it won't even matter.
I don't feel like we're normalizing it, though.
But we have.
I don't think
because, so. And I'm just saying, because when we look at, and I'm going to just, you know, bring celebrities in there because most people know who celebrities are. And so our stories are different. So when we look at a Bill Cosby, we look at a R. Kelly, we look at a Harvey Weinstein, they're not, none of those people, they've all done a heinous crime, but it's not being dealt with equally, right? So here we go. We have a R. Kelly who we definitely can compare to who? The white man who lives in a mansion who builds Playboy. Literally did the same thing R. Kelly's doing. Hugh Hefner, if you don't know his name.
I'm about to say
that.
I was
building that dramatic pause.
Oh, okay.
But Hugh Hefner. And I've been to the Playboy Mansion plenty of times. And yes. I know that, I'm in a white fraternity, of course. And so, I being there, having parties there, you know that some people are underage. You know, now as a college student, you're not thinking about any of that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're definitely looking at R. Kelly's story now that's all broadened out and put out there. And then you go back, you're like, wait a minute, Hugh wasn't all that good either.
He wasn't.
And it's literally the same story. People live in this mansion of mine and do what I tell them to do. And I pay them
mm-hmm.
for their dignity and their bodies.
It's prostitution.
Oldest job in America or in the world. So when we look at that, one of the things I don't like, I don't think we should take what happened in one frame of time and associate those rules with that, right? Because you take the Bill Cosby story, everybody was getting high, everybody was getting drugs, everybody was doing whatever they're doing. And then they say, oh, he roofied the girl. Well, no, because he told them, here's a black ant or whatever they called it. Was it black ant?
Yeah.
Yeah, here it is, because everybody's taking it, and they take it, and then they come back years later like, oh, I was raped, or I was... Because you didn't get what you wanted out of this situation. Or the ones who did get what they wanted, and then later on realized, like, we're talking now, and you're coming to this, you know, it's like, oh, wait, I was raped.
Right.
Because you didn't realize it then, but you realize it now. So it's like, who's at fault and who's at bay then? Because did the person that was raping you or sexually assaulting you, did they know? And I think that's what we're not looking at. In some of these cases, I don't know if we're actually looking at that part of it.
I mean, to be quite honest, a lot of people don't even know what consent is.
And that's what I'm saying. You get what I'm saying? Yeah, it's a whole bigger story than what we hear.
Right. A lot of people don't know what consent is. And a lot of people don't know what consent is. And a lot of people honestly don't know what the process of rape is.
Say that again.
A lot of people don't know what the process of rape is.
A lot of people don't know the process of rape. Because there is a process and a due diligence that has to be done before it's considered a rape. Just like before it's considered a murder.
Right.
It's a...
But at the same time, I just have to say this.
Yeah, no, I already know we gonna...
Still fuck R. Kelly, still fuck...
Yeah, I know you're gonna say that.
Still fuck all of them.
But that's what I'm saying. And as a woman, I expect you to say that, right?
And even though
we differ on those opinions and things,
right.
I agree with you to a degree, because if I was a woman, I don't know what it feels like to be a woman. I would never be a woman. And so I can never say that your experience and what you feel and that, just like I can empathize with you. just like I said, I see women, and like we started off the conversation, right. I see the pressure of black women, but I don't like the way you deal with it.
Right.
And I can say that because I'm watching from the outside looking in, but I don't know what that real pressure is.
Right.
I'm not feeling it. I just don't want us to get to a point in society where people aren't as important as they are.
Right. And I can understand where your concerns are coming from.
But just like the guidance counselor told you he didn't believe you. To me, that's a big problem. Like, that's a big problem. And that's a red flag. It's a red flag because once somebody doesn't believe you...
That's it. You shut down.
Or, you know, just hypothetically, what if you were lying and then they did believe you?
Mm-hmm.
Or you were telling the half-truth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the person that's having sex in the house, then they get called by their parents, then, oh, no! The parents are saying that, oh, he's raping her, but the girl was like, no, I invited him in.
Right.
But they, you know, you get threatened by your parents. Well, guess what? You better, who you gonna rock with?
Right.
You gonna rock with your parents, right?
Right.
So that's one of the, it's so many underlying issues that are not dealt with. And I know they're so minuscule and so small, but we still have to deal with them, you know?
Right. I think the most important thing is to have conversations with our kids, with people around us, and also what I think is important is to hold people accountable behind closed doors.
Where?
Behind closed doors.
And so that's one of the things that I really...
Because I'm quick to check a friend.
I think that's how forgiveness works, though.
Right.
I think everybody wants this public display.
Oh, no.
That they forget to actually go to the person.
Right. Oh, so let me tell you this.
Yes, because we need to get to the resolve of
how you forgave him.
And I know the story, so the conversation. Because I think that's really the important part that women need to hear. And men.
Yeah, and men. And
definitely men.
And I don't want to forget our kings on this thing. So,
because he became a king. Which is, to me, the awesome story. Like, I know you probably don't see it that way, or you may. But I feel like, never mind. Tell the story, then I'll tell you why.
So, fast forward. Was it 3 years ago? Fast forward 3 years or 2 years ago, I can't remember. I just remember I was a sophomore going into my junior year at NSU.
Shout out to the green and go.
Behold! So he reached out to me, right? And mind you, I already forgave him. I forgave him, forgave the action. I moved on with my life. And he reached out to me and we met.
Now, this time he's already in the NFL.
Yes, he's already in
the NFL. He's done some great things in the NFL.
Yeah, sure.
No name and just a hometown hero. All of the things, right? Yeah. And I just want to point that out for a reason, and I'll tell you why.
Right.
But go ahead.
He did all that. So, especially a hometown hero and stuff like that. And I'm not trying to say too much because I don't want to give out too much details.
No. And that's the thing.
Put pieces together and figure out who it is.
Even if they do, it's fine because I think it's, and I'll tell you, it's his heroic story too. Because what he did, he reached out.
He reached out and he apologized to me. But he didn't apologize over DM. He reached out and said, can we meet up? Now, my first instinct was like, hell no, I'm not meeting up with you. So, like, this is crazy. So, I reached out to my best friend.
But that to me, and that's the moment, and I just want to cut you right there real quick. That's the moment where I think he's a king. Because I think he went from, I've done this. I didn't even have to be really pressured into apologizing. I know what she could have done to me. But had she done all those things, I wouldn't be who I am. And so it's just coming having that catharsis in life, like, damn, I really wouldn't be who I am had she done all the things. So I'm gonna make sure I'm indebted to you.
Yeah.
So that's a king moment to me. Because kings realize their position and then be able to go back and fix wrongs that they've done.
But you know what I really appreciate during that segment of what he did was when we met up in person, I reached out to my best friend. She came with me. And I'm not going to say hold you. I was like, I have my taser. If I got to tase this nigga.
Yeah, no, man, that's real.
So, but met up and all this other stuff. And his mom was with him. And his father was with him. So, it was 3-1. I said, Lord Jesus, I should have brought some extra people. So... He looked me in my eyes and said...
Like I told you, I would have showed up that day.
Right.
And we talked about it that day. Like, you... So, what?
He basically was like, hey, I apologize for everything that I done. He said, I'm sorry for lying. I'm sorry for ruining your life. I'm sorry for telling people these horrible things about you. He said, if you want to go to court, I'm ready to go to court.
Wow. And see that, I'm saying those are the moments, and I'm not trying to give him, I'll put him on a pedestal, but for you, that's the moment where you're like, nigga, I'm about to take you the fuck down. I got your confession. I'm recording this.
Man,
but you didn't do that. You you put on your crown so big and it shines so bright. What was your response?
I forgive you.
Woo! You said what?
I forgive you.
You said what?
I forgive you.
She said, F you, nigga. I forgive you.
I said, I forgive you.
And that's the legit F you right there.
Right. And then I told him, I said, and he said, and he was ready to come public with this. Like, ready to come public, ready to be like.
And I really want to know what was his thought process behind it. Because he didn't have to.
He didn't, because everybody believes him.
But that's what I'm, you know what I'm saying? So I wonder, you know, and that's let me know that what we were talking about earlier lets you know that God works even when you don't know he's working.
Right, because he did say he will turn your enemies into your footstools. Hello? Hello?
And you would create a table in front of them to watch you be blessed.
Right. So we went to court. Mind you, we didn't go to court, but we talked to lawyers and stuff like that. Because even though I said, I forgive you, I wanted to make sure he wasn't going to do this to anybody else. And to be a woman advocate and stuff like that, my thought process was like, put him behind bars and all this other stuff. So the day comes where he pled guilty. He said, I plead guilty.
At the operation. Yeah. Or whatever.
And he was like, I want him. And he's in the process of making his confessional video. And I said, stop the video. And they was like, what are you doing? Like, you know what I'm trying to say? I was like, stop the video. And mind you, to be quite honest with you, a little bit of press was starting to get wind of what was going on behind closed doors.
Good it wasn't Wavy and Andy because, you know.
Because,
you know, Andy, oh my God, Andy be so extra.
So, you know, and I told him, I said, hey, go back to your football career. I said, that's only one thing that I ask of you. You don't have to apologize to me in front of people. You don't have to make no confession video. I just want you to go sit down at these meetings that they have for rape victims. Well, rape survivors.
I'm so happy you changed that.
Survivors.
Because we have to
change champion, the language.
Right. And we have to champion people who've gone through trauma.
And survived it. Right. So, and you know, I said, I want you to sit at the meetings and I want you to donate to the one that I went to. And so he wrote a check out, and still to this day he goes to those meetings and stuff like that. And honestly,
and low key, he became an advocate for something that, because you know, in that moment, I wonder, did he know it was rape? Like, I know he knew what he was. You know what I mean?
So let me tell you something. So you know, I'm from Baltimore, Maryland.
Yeah.
So the Ravens game was going on and stuff like that. You know, my nephews, you know, they wanted to the Ravens game. So we actually saw him like a couple of, you know, months ago, stuff like that. And he was like, can I holler at you real quick? And I looked at him and it's just like, I'm like, do you supposed to be this casual with your rapist? Like, that's what I'm thinking in my head. Like,
me and my rapists are friends.
Yeah, but we're not really friends.
But then my friend, my nephews and them are fans of this person.
And they
so
are.
It's
and it's just like, oh, it's so mind-blowing at times. And then like.
But that's where I think y'all both have y'all king and y'all queen crowns on.
So
that's what it is. That's what it's about. That's what our community has missed, I think. I think when we, you know, being drug over here and being taught European stuff and being, I think we forgot to deal with stuff at home.
Right.
And I think we forgot that only we can deal with us. And, you know, because, so, I don't know if you know anything about African culture, but in African culture, or some African cultures, in certain tribes, I won't get into all that. But in certain tribes, what would happen is if a rape or one of those things that happen, well, it depends on the culture because
that's a whole nother.
Right. Because they don't see sexuality how we do it. They don't see sex how we see. So, but if one of those things were to happen, the tribesmen or the tribeswomen, depending on who did it, because it happens both ways, right?
Right.
They will take the person and they will atone them. They won't punish them. They literally heal them and atone them and try to figure out why it happened.
Right.
And that, to me, is one of the most amazing stories I've ever heard. I was reading this book and I was studying some agriculture crap. But I was really looking at agriculture and then it started talking about anthropology. So I was really confused. But it talked about how the people took the person and blessed them after they did something wrong. And in our heads, that's like the weirdest thing, right? But they blessed them so good that they couldn't do wrong anymore. Mm. And I know for us, that's just such an opposite of... Because we'd be like, punish him, take him off, finish him, finish, get over here.
And when I think about it, that honestly what happened between me and him.
Like, you would talk to him.
And that honestly what happened between me and him. And like, now that I'm sitting down and think about it.
Now imagine when he has daughters or if he gets married and all of those things.
Oh, he has a child on the way.
And, but that's amazing. You know, that's, but that's one of those things because now he's been atoned for that moment. So that doesn't even, it's you know, sin. It right. is washed out by grace.
Right. And now he goes, when my nephew, he was sick, he hollered at me for a minute. So, last month, me and him went to his home. Well, his hometown is here, but where he lives at now.
Yeah.
We went to that state and that city, and we walked around, but we went to different high schools, and we talked about consent to the kids and everything. And, you know, he shared a testimony with the kids, but he didn't go into detail. But he was just like, I made a mistake back of my dad.
Right.
And he was like, she forgave me. And he was like, I don't want to go into details what that mistake was, but I made a mistake. And he was like, but now look at me and her. He was like, we're standing in front of y'all talking about sexual assault, talking about consent, talking about, you know, what to do next. If somebody doesn't believe you and all this other stuff. Was it awkward? It was hella awkward. But at the same time, it was great to see all those kids and all those boys come up to him and was like, but what if? And he was like, no, it's not a what if. It's a no means no.
So and he was atoned. And see, that's the thing. You really gave him. And that's power, Queen.
So, you know, it just...
You listen to Unfiltered Love Radio. Unfiltered Love Radio. Man, that was a powerful story. You listen to Unfiltered Love Radio. We were talking after. It was just like we just had a debrief, and you're amazing. And he's amazing too. And just the things that you've said and how you motivate people. I didn't expect for you to share that story, but I'm happy you did because I do feel like there's people out there dealing with men and women. And I don't think that we talk about it enough, and I don't think people know what consent is. And just for the record, could you tell people what consent is?
Listen, and listen to me carefully.
No, seriously. And I want everybody to really listen to this. I will probably make this an audio clip and put this on some other things. So I really want you to be clear in it. Because even sometimes when I'm doing things in my normal life, I almost want to have every person make a video and say that they agreed to what we agreed to do.
Right.
And though I don't want that to happen, I just feel like we're at that time in life where you literally can say anybody did anything and it's true.
Right.
And that's not necessarily a true statement.
Right.
Because some people take advantage of that when they get in an argument or they don't like something. So, you're listening to Sujet on Unfiltered Love Radio. She's going to explain what consent is.
Consent is when you and the other person verbally, listen to me carefully, verbally,
it got to come out of their mouth, in your mouth.
In your mouth, in their mouth.
Whoa. Coming both of their mouths. Anyway.
You're so fantastic. But when y'all both verbally agree, this is what you're going to do sexually. Or if you say, even if it's not sexually, it's like, hey, like, can I touch you?
Right.
Can I, you know, and they say yes. That's a verbal consent. Also, you need to know, even if you are in the middle of intercourse, and they say stop, you have to automatically stop.
Then it goes further than
because
that.
Because that goes to because
you
course.
Say if they say stop, or if they say I don't want to, if they say no, even if they give a gesture that implies that they were uncomfortable, and I think we forget that gesture part.
Yeah. But what holds up mostly in court is that verbal.
That verbal.
And if they say I said, and then if you like, oh yeah, she did or he did say that, then that's right. And basically,
and it's sticky. It really is sticky.
It is a sticky situation. Really is, because my nephew is like 18 years old, and you know, he was having sex with this girl, whatever. And in the middle of sex, she was like, I don't want to do this no more. And he was like, nah, it's okay. Just let me nut first. And she was like, okay. I told him, I said, if she would have took you to court, you would have went to jail.
But that's the thing, and then the situations where you sure you want to do this, and they say yeah, and then they're unsure about it.
But you know what? Now in the law it says ask three times. If you ask three times,
and they say
you
yeah.
are covered.
Okay.
So
and I mean this is the advocate that's really more familiar with it than I am. I deal with it a lot because of my job and yeah. just because of life, and I talk to a lot of people off the record about these sort of things. But I think it's so apparent and so real that we literally have to deal with it because it's such a gray area.
It is a gray area.
And there's so many gray areas, but because we've silenced voices.
For years.
Across the board. We've silenced the victim's voice or the survivor's voice, mm-hmm. but we've also silenced the voice of the person who was perpetuating it because, like, once somebody's been accused of it, we don't want to hear what they have to say.
Right.
And that's the thing. I think we need to hear what they say so we can come up with, oh, so you thought that because da-da-da-da-da. And we need to hear the survivor, oh, so you didn't want to because da-da-da-da-da. We have to fill in those gaps and fill in those holes.
Yeah, especially because we all know this stems back to slavery.
Right. Because we didn't have this in the community. I'm sorry.
We didn't, because when those slave owners was taking those, our black men.
And raping them
to make them feel less powerful, less mm-hmm. of a man. Nobody held them accountable.
Right, and that's the thing. I think a lot of it deals with our mental bondage that we're still in today. And there's a lot of underlying issues that we just haven't dealt with. And when we talk about, when we add church onto that dynamic, that's a whole nother thing that we can divulge in that hasn't dealt with that either.
Oh, yeah. Like, church don't deal with stuff like that.
And that's the thing. But because they think they need to deal with it angrily or unforgiving, or they think they have to literally stone people.
Or pray it through,
that it never gets resolved because nobody ever talks about it. Right. People just literally stop talking.
Right.
And that's the creepy part about it. Like,
or they just accept that random child and be like, oh, who's this? Oh, this your cousin.
Right.
But it's actually like, your grandfather slept with your cousin and this is their baby.
But that's the thing. And it's because it's never talked about. And that's the thing. It's talked about amongst the people that you're close with, but never the person in the person.
Right.
And that's where the problem is, because if you were to talk to the person who did it, and the person who it was done to, and if they were to have a legit conversation, like you and him had a legit conversation, because you probably, I don't know within the conversation, because you never said this or alluded to this, but you probably understood, oh, I get where you was coming from in that moment. Mm-hmm. I don't know why you did it still. I didn't approve of it, but I do, I kind of, as I'm older now and I'm thinking about it, I see where you may have had that assumption that it was okay.
Right. He told me that when we talked about it. He told me, he was like, my friends hyped me up, making me think that you liked me.
Ah.
And that you were playing hard to get with me. And
so for him, it's a game at this point.
It was
And for
a
you,
game.
It's the whole life.
Yeah.
But you see how that, just that little part of the conversation, we didn't even get all the way into.
Right.
But that little part of the conversation is a whole misconception.
It was, because in my head...
And probably, and this is not to say, but probably if he would have talked to you and be like, yo, what's up? You might have been like, all right.
Nah.
No, you don't like him like that?
I ain't like him like that.
But if it was somebody you like that,
he wasn't dark enough for me.
Like she, the black of the berry, the thick of the juice.
Right. but honestly, like, you know, I've been raised with eight brothers.
Right. So you knew what you are. You know how.
I attract more to men for friendship.
Right.
Because I was closer to my brothers, because my sisters were always working.
Right.
So, you know, so me and him being cool, or me being cool with any guy, is, in my head, is really a friendship, because I was raised with men.
Right. Look, y'all listen to Unfiltered Love Radio. We running out of time. We ran way, way, way over today.
My bad.
I appreciate y'all for listening. Make sure you like, share, subscribe, listen to. I usually do the Unfiltered Love moment right now. I'm going to let Kayla give y'all a moment. It can be about anything motivational. Motivate the people. First of all, tell the people where they can find you.
Okay.
This is your plug moment. And like what you got coming up.
Follow me on Instagram at Sujet, CUYJET. Follow me on Facebook at Kayla Walker, KHAYLA, Walker, walk with the ER. to it. Like I said earlier, I have an event coming up March 13th, Dynamic Divas Tea at Slover Library.
Now, I don't know what this episode will be out by then, but hopefully.
I'll just be telling you. But hey, check this out. And this is all I want to say. It's never your fault. And once you get that through your head, it's easy to move on in life. Forgive and let that be your peace. Thank you so much.
So as we say around here, I appreciate everybody. Make sure y'all like, share, subscribe. You've been listening to Unfiltered Love Radio. It's your guy, Can Listens. I listen from heaven to earth to me to you. Sell it all in love so that you can be free and live your mega life. We got to have you back on here. I appreciate you for coming.